His skin is white just like a ghost. Thick Irish roots and his blonde hair. And he sounds like a Chicago super fan. A music nerd with a collection of CDs from here to there. Yes, Andy Dare is in Chicago, interviewing and barbecuing. It's the Andy Dare Show. It's the Andy Dare Show.
Welcome to the Andy Dare Show. Today it is episode 142. I am joined by an awesome guy, Kevin Wood, founding member of Malfunction. And yeah, he's got a great story to tell. They're actually celebrating 35 years as a band. And, you know, they've had their triumphs. They've definitely had their heartbreak. Obviously, if you're any fan of the Seattle scene, you know about Andrew Wood, his brother. You know about the tragedy. He succumbed to drugs in 1990 at the young age of 24. This guy had such a huge future ahead of him. But yes, the drugs took him over, and it's a sad story, but Malfunction certainly had their own style. They pretty much gave birth to a lot of these bands that are, you know, normal everyday, you know, household names, such as Pearl Jam, Soundgarden, a lot of that stuff, Alice in Chains. The term grunge is bandied about a lot, but really they were just a hard rock band with a really charismatic lead singer, Andrew Wood. Kevin Wood on guitar. He had awesome riffs, great stage presence, and yeah, they pretty much were around for the 80s. They played a lot of shows. They released 7-inch single or 12-inch singles and stuff like that. At one point, Andrew Wood started jamming with guys. Another group of guys, Mother Love Bone, they would become. And yeah, they recorded their debut album called Apple, and pretty much the future was theirs. And unfortunately, the whole pressure of the rock and roll industry got to Andy Wood. And he had already had a pretty much a history with drugs. And in 1990, I think right as soon as the album came out, he overdosed and was put on life support for a couple days, but then pretty much gave out. And it's a sad story. He had so much talent, so much charisma. He was truly a rock god. And but the guys in the band, they went on to form Pearl Jam. So really, he is a huge piece of musical history, American music history. There's a great film if you want to learn more about Andrew Wood. Malfunction, the Andrew Wood story, it's called. And I believe it's out on the internet. You can just stream it at your leisure. It's a great story. Sad ending, of course. But really, he gave birth to a huge scene of music, the Seattle scene. So really, in every song you hear, you know, every Nirvana song, there's a little bit of Andrew Wood back in the background. So his style still lives on, you know, 25 years later. And Kevin is keeping the whole tradition alive, still playing shows with Malfunction, still recording with the guys. They have, obviously, they've gone through some singers, but they have a new one that they really enjoy. Check them out, malfunction.org. That's MALFUNKSHUN.org, malfunction.org. And Kevin was so nice to take the time out of his day to speak with me. And I think it's an awesome interview, so I'll keep my spiel short today. We will be right back after this message.
Yo, what goes on, people? Jay Porks here. Just reminding you to keep it locked to the Deer Network throughout 2015, where you can get the Tyler Kale Show, the smooth, sultry tones of the Jay Porks Experience, or the Andy Deer Show. Keep it locked to andydeer.com. 2015, big things coming.
And we are back. I got a brand new podcast out. It's a new show called Spin Class. And it's with Tyler Kale, friend of the network. He's got his own show, The Tyler Kale Show. He's a funny and talented guy. And Spin Class is basically me and Tyler critiquing a classic hip-hop album from the 80s or 90s. And it's spinclasspodcast.com. It's also on iTunes, but yeah, just check out spinclasspodcast.com and new episodes every Monday. The first episode we got is our critique of Liquid Swords, the 1995 classic hip-hop album by Genius / GZA, the GZA from Wu-Tang. And yeah, it's an interesting album. You know, not many albums talk about kung fu and the game of chess and shadow boxing and all that stuff. So it's an interesting album that's kind of not really of any kind of popularity in 2015. We're going to be digging up the classics, me and Tyler Kale. And yeah, executive producer is superfan Giovanni Giorgio. Met him through the whole Adam Carolla universe, and he was so nice to help us get this thing off its feet. So yeah, every Monday, check out SpinClassPodcast.com. Me and Tyler Kale, a couple of clueless Caucasians critiquing the classics. And what else do we have? Yeah, the Honeycomb fanzine. As I said, 2015, we started doing this fanzine out of my house, the Honeycomb Hideout. And it's a free monthly magazine just featuring me, Tyler Kale, Jay Porks, Dan Korhonen. We're doing artwork, album reviews, poetry, you name it. As I said, it's something that you can't like on Facebook. You can't follow it on Twitter. All you got to do is call 630-341-3022, leave a voicemail, and give me your mailing address. And I will send you a free copy of the Honeycomb fanzine once a month. We don't spam you. We don't do anything else. It's just a simple little creative endeavor that we started in January. I want to thank the 30-something people that we have on the mailing list. Hope you guys enjoy it. And, yeah, great episode today. Want to thank Kevin Wood. Check out malfunction.org. And without further ado, my episode 142, Love Rock, with special guest Kevin Wood. Hey, everybody. Thank you so much for checking out the Andy Dare Show. Today, it is episode 142. And I am joined by one of the godfathers of grunge. I'm so psyched to talk to Kevin Wood. How you doing, man?
I'm doing good, thanks. How are you doing?
I'm doing really well. Yeah, it's an honor to speak with somebody with the history that you've got. And, yeah, the power of social media. You just reach out to somebody and next day you're interviewing them. It's a pretty cool thing we're living in 2015. Yeah, you just did your annual big show at the Point Casino in Kingston. How did that go for you?
Well, it went really well. You know, they take care of us over there in Kingston, and we had a great turnout. All the local people, you know, the people from our roots, and some new fans too. It was absolutely, like always, it was a great event. You know, we love to come up to Seattle and play during the time of our anniversary. You know, we formed the band in on Easter Sunday back in 1980, and we try to come back to Seattle every Easter or around Easter.
Sure.
So, yeah, it was great.
So it's kind of a family tradition now, right?
Yeah, we're establishing a family tradition.
I love it, and yeah, 35 years, man, that's insane, that's awesome, and yeah, got a new lineup going, and yeah, like, so is Kingston in by Seattle? Where is Kingston? Because I made it up to Aberdeen. I've made it to Olympia. And where is Kingston in the whole layout of Washington State?
Kingston is across the water from Seattle. Actually, it's across the water from Edmonds, which is north of Seattle.
Okay.
So, you know, it's basically a hop, skip, and a jump from Seattle. And, you know, you take a ferry to get there.
Cool. That's awesome. I like that a lot. And, yeah, I always had a blast going up and, like, visiting the Pacific Northwest. It just seems like it's a completely different style than here in Chicago. A lot less competition. It seems more friendly. But then you got everything. You know, Aberdeen can be pretty redneck and stuff like that. So, yeah, it's a cool melting spot. But, like, yeah, taking it back, I mean, 35 years, how about, like, the first Malfunction show? Can you even remember it? And what was... Was it at a school? Where was the first show?
The first show was in an apple orchard on Bainbridge Island, and it was, what was it called? It's called Blackberry Jam. It was, yeah, that was our first show. And we were more of a punk band back then, and we had, you know, short hair. Actually, I had kind of long hair, but I wore a bag over my head, and I vomited milk for my stage antics. And then my little brother Andy was total punked out. He had cut his hair that morning with scissors, or had his buddy Regan, who was our drummer at the time, cut his hair. So, yeah, it was definitely a different scene back then.
That's awesome. I mean, like 1980, that was like the Pacific Northwest. I mean, you had Heart, you had like Jimi Hendrix in the 60s, but it was seemed like it was definitely between scenes in 1980, right?
Yeah, yeah, it was between scenes, I guess. We had no idea, though. We were just cutting our teeth, you know, just kids, and we didn't really know what was going on, but we were happy to be a part of a burgeoning scene, which we saw as the punk scene coming out. You know, the rebellion, the angst.
Sure.
The, you know, knocking down establishment, you know, it was fun. It was a lot of fun, and we embraced that scene. And then of course, we developed, we moved on, we kind of climbed back on board with rock and roll rather quickly. You know, within a couple years, we were, you know, doing our own version of stadium rock. So,
yeah, that's definitely what set you guys apart when that whole scene started to explode, was that you guys were, you know, influenced by the hair metal. You didn't sound quite hair metal, but you were influenced by it. You were influenced by the big 70s stadium acts, Zeppelin, Aerosmith, all that stuff, Kiss, even like that. And yeah, I guess when you guys started, it was more of a rebellion against that stuff. But as time grew by, were you guys going and buying those 70s albums and saying, hey, this stuff actually doesn't suck. These guys had chops. These guys could put on a show, which is important, because even if you're a punk, you're still in show business. So you gotta entertain the people. Was it something like you started respecting that whole 70s stadium scene?
Well, it was more like we were able to play better, you know. We were lucky in that, you know, the early punk scene there were a lot of experimental bands with guys that knew maybe two chords, right?
Sure.
And so we were just starting out. Basically, we were learning to play as we developed the band. And so it was a perfect avenue for us to play music that didn't take a lot of chops. But it was hard for us to do because, like I said, we were just learning how to play our instruments. And so we had a whole scene that was nothing but that. And so as we got better at playing our instruments, we started playing the music that we really loved, which is 70s rock, 70s stadium rock, you know, metal style, you know. But at the same time, we wanted to keep a unique voice. We always wanted to be different and set apart. So we trended away from rhythms and chord progressions that other bands were using at the time. So, you know, there was always that credo in Malfunction to be different and to step away from the pack, you know?
I love that. That pretty much sums it up beautifully. Like, taking it back, was Andy in high school, was he just the huge personality that we know of him today, or did it take a while for him to get out of his shell?
He was always a performer. You know, before he wanted to be a rock star, he wanted to be a DJ, and he sat in his room and he made radio shows. And he was always just, you know, so personable, and people loved him. And then he always was trying to be different too. And I remember when he cut his hair, he got beat up at the high school because they didn't like it, you know. So he was always on. He was the house performer, you know, and always making people laugh and smile from day one, really, you know.
That's really cool. How about the age difference between you guys? I'm unaware of that. How much older are you?
I'm only 4 years older than he was.
And then there's a third brother, Brian, right?
Yeah, Brian, he's a year younger than me. So we were really close in age, but not very close as far as musical endeavors. He trended towards a different vibe, you know. He was into the new wave kind of techno,
really?
You know, sportish kind of stuff. So,
yeah, I'm aware of the band Hader and his work with them, And it's different. It's cool. It's just different. And once again, with members of that whole Seattle, Washington State scene, everything, like, it seemed almost like everybody, like, played in each other's bands. Everybody dated each other's girlfriends or something. Like, it just seemed very close-knit for like, a landscape that's pretty spread out. I mean, going from Aberdeen to Seattle, that's a six-hour drive and stuff. And there's, you know, all this different terrain that you deal with over in that state. But it does seem like it was kind of close-knit. How about this? Like, the whole K Records scene kind of stuck out like a sore thumb. Like, they were a little bit too cool for school? Or am I wrong with that statement? Or
now, who was that?
The whole K Records thing with, like, the beat happening and Calvin Johnson and that whole... There was the beat happening there. Do you know about them? Or they're from Olympia?
No, man. It must not have been very cool, because I don't know about them.
Nice. Yeah, they were kind of just like, they were considered this genre called twee, which is like banging on one snare drum, having like two guitar strings, and the singer had a super low baritone voice. But yeah, you guys were more of the all balls out rocking sound. But so,
yeah,
I did read somewhere that Sub Pop thought you guys weren't grunge enough. Did you, was that a truth or was that a rumor?
That is a truth. And, you know, at the time, grunge was not a complimentary term. And so we laughed, you know?
Sure.
When grunge, the name or the word grunge started coming out, it was for bands that were, you know, quasi, you know, second, third generation punk bands and, you know, younger guys that didn't play very well and their demos sounded grungy, you know?
Sure.
And it was not something that we were aspiring to be at all. We're like, hey, that's okay. We're not grungy enough. That's a compliment, right?
It's like, you guys don't suck. Come on. Do we actually want to suck? That's funny. But then CZ Records picked you up, right?
Yeah, we were on a compilation with CZ, and then we were on a compilation earlier with it was that the one with Soundgarden
Like Deep Six or
Six, yeah, Deep
yeah.
Six.
Nice. I wonder how much those go on eBay for. If I'm a record fiend, I'm a record collector. Go to stores every week, and I've never seen it, never even heard of anybody who has seen it in a store. You don't have a copy laying around, do you?
I have one copy left.
Nice.
I got a little pile of them back in the day and ended up giving them all away, but I do have one left.
Hold on to that.
I gave one to my mom, and she made a collage with it, and she used a glue gun, and she glued a bunch of crap all over. So one that will never see the light of day again.
That's an awesome story. That's hilarious. Yeah. How about, like, after the whole, malfunction thing Well, actually, Andy got interested in jamming with other guys who would later become Mother Love Bone, like the whole world knows. Did you take that as a little bit of a slap to the face, or was it, hey, do what you want to do? Were you guys getting along at that point?
Well, you know, it wasn't actually a breakup of malfunction. It was just Andy, you know, hanging with his buddies. And, you know, he hung out with those guys a lot, so it sort of was a natural occurrence, you know?
Sure.
There was never any real band breakup malfunction. It was, you know, according to the big plan, we were just taking a hiatus, which we had done, you know, over the years. Andy was in the band for 8 years, and during those times, we had periods of inactivity. I mean, not, like, long periods of inactivity, but... You know, every now and then we'd take a break and, you know, regroup and,
sure.
You know, there were different eras. So, yeah, that, you know, of course it was sort of, you know, when it looked like Mother Love Bone was going to take off, then I started, you know, trying to figure out what I was going to do in the meantime, because I figured Andy would be pretty busy. So I started forming other groups and, you know, I had some success with Fire Ants and Devil Head after the whole fact. And, of course, you know, after Andy passed away, it was, you know, wow, that's huge. And
take the wind out of your sails completely. Like, I don't want to even look at my guitar for a month, like, after that happens. Was music more of a hey, the music is the one thing that makes me forget about that pain, or after his passing?
Well, you never forget about the pain. See, that's the thing. It never goes away, and it's always with me and our family. It's a huge tragedy that you just don't live. You never forget it. And so anyway, I mean, life goes on. I'm a player, and I've committed myself to being a player. And you know, as a player, part of my life is playing. So, you know, I just never stop. So
that's awesome.
There are other things to do. I mean, you know, other bands, other things to get involved with. So, Andy was a big part of Malfunction back in the day, and God knows what it would be like today if he was still around and contributing to Malfunction the way he did. I'm sure things would be vastly different. I mean, he's been gone now for 25 years. He'd be a grown man by now, and so we have, you know, growth, we have change, we have, you know, a lot of what might have been, but the fact of the matter is that it is what it is, and I'm continuing to keep the Malfunction vibe alive, which is love rock.
That's
awesome. You know, and it's big love rock, and we come out and we rock. We play some old songs, we play some new songs, we play some Mother Love Bone tunes. Last time we played it, we did Argent, Hold Your Head Up, which was nice. Part of our set back, part of Malfunction set back in the 80s when, before Love Bone did it. So
that's awesome.
That's,
so it's a nice mix of everything pretty much from your past and the present. That's awesome. And it's crazy to think, like, I'm sure when you guys, when Andy was in MLB, you guys think that you're adults, you're doing your own thing, but really that was a kid who passed away. That was not a full-grown adult. He had a lot more growth left in him. How old was he when he passed?
I think he was 24.
Yeah, that's just a kid. That's a kid still testing the waters, still finding his voice, even though he had been with, you know, jamming with Malfunction for 8 years. That's... You guys got an early start, and yeah, you could definitely tell he seemed like a seasoned performer. He seemed like a veteran in 1989 when he was, yeah, as you say, 23, 24 years old. That's insane to look back at that. And it's same thing with Kurt Cobain. The guy was 27. He seemed like a veteran of the rock and roll scene at that time. But yeah, time keeps moving, and how about like the next, are you guys going to go back in the studio? What's the newest thing you got out as far as recordings for Malfunction?
Well, right now, our new vocalist, Jeff Stark, is going to take some stabs at some new material that I have been impatiently waiting to have adequate vocals put on.
Hell yeah, nice.
You know, put them through the vocalist rather quickly this last year. I'm really excited. Jeff is an awesome performer, and he's got great chops, and he's got a great attitude. And the vocalists that we've had in the past have all been, you know, I think they've really concentrated. They felt the need to fill Andy's shoes. And you know, the problem is that nobody can fill Andy's shoes.
It's
They're
true.
Too big. And so what we have is a need, and now we have the ability with Jeff Stark to move on. He can cover all of the old material, and he has a voice of his own that he loves to share. So I'm super excited that he's going to blow on some of the new tunes here.
Nice.
Yeah, we've got actually some label interest in a live show that was recorded in New Mexico year before last that we're working on now to remaster and mix. So there's stuff coming up for Malfunction.
That's awesome. It seems with your guys' history, you guys could just go right over to Jack Endino at Reciprocal or Robert Lang Studios, maybe get a discount here and there and, you know, come up with a recording that, you know, stands the test of time. That would be awesome. So,
yeah. Well, you know, and plus I have my own recording studio in my house here that I can layer guitars and, you know, stay up all night without the you know, without the hourly charge.
Sure, the meter ticket. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's awesome. So, yeah, just got a couple more things here. Just thanks for taking the time out. Appreciate it. Yeah, it was funny. I was going through the CD bins about a month ago, and I found a disc or a dollar bin item, a CD, Grunge Lite. It's called L-I-T-E, and it's on CZ Records, and it is a girl who's playing all some grunge hits, but, you know, they do Smells Like Teen Spirit, but they do other weird, like, hardly known stuff like that. There's no, like, malfunction on there, but there's bands I haven't even heard of, and I just thought it was a nice idea to try putting your own spin on these classics, but in the end, it sounded like a lady tinkering with her Casio, and I'll send you a link on Facebook. It's definitely worth a giggle or a chuckle, but yeah, that's pretty funny. And here's one last thing. I did see that Pearl Jam made a little thing to help out your mom get a new pad. That's pretty awesome, right?
Yeah, it's totally awesome. You know, I started a GoFundMe campaign myself last year, you know, before winter, because my mom was living in this place that, you know, leaking roof and a, you know, bad wiring, and I was really worried for her. And, of course, I didn't have the funds to buy her a new place. You know, I want to help my mom out as much as possible, but definitely, you know, with Pearl Jam stepping in, stepping up, and, you know, unleashing the fans and their own wallets to help out my mom, it is such a relief for me to know that my mom is safe and sound, and she's got a decent roof over her head. And Jeff and Stone, Eddie and Kelly, all of the Pearl Jam people that threw in, and all the Pearl Jam fans that contributed, you know, the fans, the people who contributed to the original GoFundMe campaign. I mean, God, you know, it's just heartwarming to know that people really care. And my mom's got a new place, a solid roof over her head, and she's going to be fine, you know.
I love it, man. Really, that's beautiful. That's showing, like, the good karma you guys built up all throughout the last 35 years paid off, and that's Love Rock. That's the definition of Love Rock. Great to hear that you guys are still friendly with all the guys from the old scenes and stuff like that, and Pearl Jam having a big heart like that. And, yeah, if my listeners want to find out more, go to malfunction.org. You got tour dates, you got music, you got links, whole bunch of good stuff, good pictures and stuff like that. And, yeah, you on Twitter and Facebook and social media stuff, right?
Right. We've got a YouTube channel. It works, you know. Come and like us on Facebook and tweet.
Yeah. Awesome. Sounds good. And, yeah, just want to thank you so much for taking the time out. This was an honor and a blast to chat with you. Any last words, Kevin?
Well, it's my pleasure, and thank you for having me out. I appreciate that, and keep up the good work. You know, I've always had just the greatest time in Chicago.
Nice.
I've played there twice in recent years, and when I play there again, you'll be the first to know, and let's tip a cup back.
Yeah, I would definitely love to. It'd be an honor, and yeah, stay in touch, man. And on behalf of Kevin Wood, this is Andy signing off for the Andy Dare Show.
This episode of the Andy Dare Show is brought to you in part by Uncle Bub's award-winning barbecue in Westmont, Illinois. Family-owned and operated since 1997, Uncle Bub's is the real deal barbecue. A family-friendly restaurant open 7 days a week. Also, it's a full-service catering company doing weddings, pig roasts, luaus, grill packages, you name it. They have a friendly, helpful staff that will make sure that your party goes off without a hitch. Call them at 630-493-9000. Visit them at 132 South Cass Avenue in Westmount, Illinois, and UncleBubs.com.
Hey man, I know you like grilling. I know you like getting those dark grill marks on your burgers, fish, chicken. And I know you don't want to just dry your meat out like you're cooking with a hairdryer. Why not get the Man Grate and click through the AndyDareShow.com's banner so we can keep the lights on here at Honeycomb Hideout Studios in gorgeous Westmont, Illinois. The Man Grate. This episode of the Andy Dare Show is brought to you in part by Record Utopia.
a music lover's dream with thousands of vinyl records, musical instruments, and sound gear. They buy, sell, and trade. Give them a call at 630-963-1957. Visit them in Westmont, Illinois at 309 West Ogden Avenue, on the web at recordutopia.com. It's always a good, relaxed atmosphere. Check them out, Record Utopia. Be sure to follow Andy on Twitter, that's at Andy Darer, and like our show on Facebook, that's facebook.com/TheAndyDarerShow. Videos at youtube.com/AndrewMartinDarer, and we're on iTunes, just search The Andy Darer Show, please leave a review. Thanks so much to our wonderful sponsors, Uncle Bub's award-winning barbecue, Record Utopia, The Band Grate, and Amazon.com. Theme song courtesy of Rich Banks Music. Thank you so much for checking out The Andy Darer Show. TheAndyDarerShow.com.